My name's Elizabeth Hun. I used to be a nurse working for part of the Royal Hobart in the dialysis unit. A year or so ago, I decided I'd done enough of that and I needed a change, and I was thinking, I want to do something a bit different. And I've always loved painting and making and growing things. So somehow all these things came together. My husband had just started a distillery and he was needing someone to go around all the different places to sell our stuff, and he was going to pay someone. I thought, I could do that. I can talk to people. So I did that and did my nursing and was a painter. So I was a very busy girl.
So you worked in dialysis. What led you there?
I was a midwife lactation consultant for 25 years. And you get to a point in your life and you just think, I want a little bit more order. Midwifery did not bring any routines. You know, it's so random when people have babies, so random when babies wake up and just scream and are hysterical. And I worked in neonatal intensive care doing lactation work. So it was really difficult, really difficult. And then I was in the community doing lactation work, and that was better because you had appointments. Then my mum died, and you realise that there's bigger things than when new mums don't get enough sleep and they're hysterical about that. So dialysis was good because I'd really got into this end-of-life sort of care with my mother. And anyone who's on dialysis, you know, their kidneys do not work for the rest of their lives. So they're on dialysis for the rest of their life, or they get a transplant. And there's a lot of people who never get a transplant because of health issues. So when I was working full-time, I was running the home dialysis unit. That was fantastic because they were people who were really wanting to be in charge of their life again and didn't want to be tied to a machine in a hospital or outpatient setting for the rest of their life, because then you have the freedom to do as much dialysis whenever you want.
What's a home dialysis machine like?
They're really quite portable. But it's a big deal to be deemed capable of safely dialysing at home. You know, you have to stick needles into yourself, two of them each time. That's not for a lot of people, but, you know, with psychologists' help, we can almost get anybody to do that if the motivation is there with them, and they have to be motivated. So why would you want to do home dialysis? What would be the advantage to you? So whether it's you can then go away for a longer break, you don't have to stick to a very inflexible timetable, you can do it in the comfort of your own home.
That does sound like a bit easier than helping a brand new mum with a brand new baby cope with getting the baby to latch on properly. What was the most common problem a new mum would have with getting a baby to feed?
Sore nipples is the most common problem, and then that causes obviously a lot of pain, and then the baby doesn't get enough milk, so then the baby wakes up and screams a whole lot more. But it's all about attachment. You know, if you see people before they've had the baby and talk to them when they're completely logical, because they're not sleep deprived, they're not emotionally involved at that point really, show them how to do it, what is normal. They will be so much better than someone who all of a sudden they're beside themselves with sore nipples and an absolutely screaming baby and no milk and no sleep.
But you finally decided enough of medicine. You had too much other things going on in your life.
Absolutely, because I was going to become a grandmother myself, so I didn't want to be bringing all the germs home to my grandbaby, because I was so excited about that, because I never thought I was going to have any. So I made the big decision. I was going to be the sales and marketing distribution manager, which sounds all very fancy, and a painter. And in my garden, I grow the ingredients that we make to put into our gin.
Let's just stand over here in your lounge room for a second here. Is this all your work, these paintings on the wall?
Yes, actually, most of them. This is the one of Bill Lark that I actually did out in the Lark Distillery out in Cambridge. That was a lot of fun. And then I did a big one from that, which David and I took up to the Archibalds, which was a wonderful adventure, which now hangs in Lark Distillery in town.
What would you say your style is as a painter?
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to be put in a pigeonhole, Joel. I paint whatever I find beautiful. So I paint rocks, I paint copper, I paint faces. I love painting people, I love scenery. I don't do abstract. I'm a realist painter. That's probably my style.
To make a face work, you've got to kind of pick out the things that make that face distinct. So have a look at me.
Yeah.
What would you work on to make it look like me in a painting?
It's your eyes. You've got very distinctive eyes. So I'd make a feature of them. If you come into the other room, I'm just finishing a commission where I did small paintings of just the faces of a family. You can have a look. You can see the similarities between the faces. Because it's also, you want it to be a piece of art, not just a likeness. That's what a photo is. And, you know, I say to the people if I'm doing a portrait, are there any little bits of you that you'd like me to downplay?
A little bit of airbrushing?
A little bit of airbrushing, middle bit of reduction, perhaps, you know, smoothing out.
If you could take the bump off my nose, I'd be grateful.
Yeah, $10,000 tooth treatment. You know, I've done all sorts of stuff like that, and that's fine.
Mind you, if you took the bump off my nose, I would not look like me.
You could soften it, though, so it's not a feature. And this is where it's all about. So you've got amazing smiling eyes, right? So that would be what it would be. And I would downplay your slightly bent nose.
Slightly. Thank you very much. I'll take that.
But only very slightly bent.
So this is the painter's studio.
So this is my studio.
You have, it's not carpet, but it's a soft floor.
Oh, there's a lovely pure wool carpet under here, but I'm very messy and I don't want to have to be tidy and clean. So I got a painter's canvas and just stretched this over my lovely dark wool carpet. And now I can be as sloppy as I like.
Here is this family. You can see some similarities around the lips and the eyes, can't you?
So this is a father and son here. There's definitely similarities there with the eyes and the brows and the hair. Just different stages, a different life stage of hair colour. Yeah. And this one here, you know, I glamorised this young woman because she deserves to be glamorised.
That's a painting she'll want to put up and have
That's
forever.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I've captured them, this family, at this time in their life. If you just do a whole family portrait, you know, what happens in 20 years' time? Who gets it? You know, whereas if you do little individual ones like this, you know, they're 12 by 12. So they're a nice size to have on the wall. And what these guys are going to do is to make a frame at the parent home and then put all these inside it. And then, like, you know, 20, 30 years down the track, they can all just take their individual one. So I think it's a nice concept, especially as young people are starting to leave home.
So how do you approach something like the pictures above there? So we've got some yachts down at the docks. If in a person you're picking a feature to centralise, what are you doing to make a picture landscape?
I actually say out loud to myself, I talk to myself all the time when I'm painting, what is it about this scene or this face or this still life that is the thing that I want people to be drawn to? What is the magnet part? And these boats, to me, it's on this one here.
It's the green kind of sails exactly. That have been wrapped up.
So it worked. My plan worked. And on this one, it's the reflection of the sail cover and the sail cover just catching that afternoon light. This young, gorgeous baby here, it's the eyes.
The blue eyes are really something, aren't they?
They are. This pregnant woman over here, it's the belly. We won't go there.
So did that young lady come in and pose naked for that?
She did, absolutely did. And being a midwife lactation consultant, she was quite comfortable with that.
Ah. You're just used to having naked people around, aren't you?
I'm quite comfortable with naked people, Joel.
I mean, most nurses are, but a midwife particularly.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And here's one full of love. There's your husband sitting back outside reading with his boot up.
Yes, I love that picture. That was David had a day off. That was Boxing Day a couple of years ago, and I set him on that comfortable recliner up on the outside table outside, and I stood there and painted him, and he read his book all day and was quite happy to.
Men, we are easily pleased creatures, aren't we?
Oh,
look adoringly at me and let me read a book, I'm good.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He loves to just read a book on a summer afternoon is pretty nice.
Do you have an aim? Do you want to win the Archibald Prize? Is there something else you're aiming for here? Or is it this just doing something you love and seeing what happens?
I have goals. I'd like to get a painting actually hung in the Archibalds. I would just love that. But it's not easy to do that because I'm a realist painter. I'm not a controversial painter. And they like to have controversial sort of paintings as the winners. So I'm more of a packing room sort of prize person. Painting takes you in so many ways all over the world and throughout history. There's just so much to learn. And one day I would love to be teaching painting.
Can we have a look at the things you're growing to go in your gin?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let's come up to the compost area because I'm finding this really interesting. I'm doing what's called a no-dig garden, which means every year, just the once, you put on a thick layer of compost, which adds everything plants need for two or three crops out of the same garden bed once a year. So I'm into serious amounts of compost making. So with the distillery, when you make whiskey, you have what's called draff left, which is like a dehydrated half-cooked porridge. So that's very high in lots of the nutrients, makes fantastic compost. So we wheelbarrow that all up here, goes into my compost bays. I mix it with hay and pine needles and seaweed and all those good things, turn it around a few times. And this is a bespoke compost bay, so all the slats on it can be removed.
It's like a box that you can fill up and then you can take one side out, just slide out the timber.
Yes. It's fantastic design. There's an English gardener called Charles Dowding. He worked it all out and it's just brilliant. So in the next month or so, I'll be moving most of this compost out on top of this garden that we're looking at and into my brand new polytunnel, which I'm so excited about, so ready for spring growth.
So what do you have in your garden for the purposes of gin making? Can you grow the juniper berries, the basic?
No, I'm not growing juniper because I don't want to deprive the Hungarian peasants of doing that. I don't know if anyone knows, but growing juniper grows on a type of pine sort of tree, and they don't all ripen at once. Like, there's one be ripe, and then, you know, 500 millimetres over there, there'll be another one berry ripe. So it's incredibly labour-intensive. I'm too busy to do that. Far too busy. So I'm currently growing the chilies for our chili vodka. So I'm growing them in this little hothouse just here. You know, I grow almonds on the almond tree over here. There's nuts in gin. People don't realise that. At the right time of the year, I'll be planting a whole lot of coriander because that's a main ingredient and harvesting the seeds.
Yep.
I grow lavender that goes in. There's a lemon tree down here and we gather lots of lemons from friends and family as well around Hobart.
So how do you describe the type of gin that you are trying to make?
4 years ago, I think it was about 4 years ago, David came to me. He'd been writing a book and couldn't get it published. And I said, David, you need to earn some money, sweetie. It's your turn. Came back a few weeks later and said, okay, I want to start a distillery. And I said, what?
That's spending money, not making money.
Exactly. And I said, where do you want to make? And he said, oh, in our shed. And I said, what do you want to make? And he said, whiskey, of course. What else? And I said, well, I'm sorry. There's a problem. I don't like whiskey. It's half my shed. So he said, well, what if I make you the best gin that you can afford to buy? And I thought about this for a moment, being a gin lover, and I thought, yeah, I could work with that. So I was the customer, basically, for David, which was actually worked out really well because he had to make something for me. And to be truthful, Joel, I would have drunk anything before you get a choice. Once you get a choice of what sort of gin you like, you know, the world's your oyster. So poor David, 6 months of every day making a new recipe to try and make his wife happy. It was seriously 6 months. So it turns out that I like a boldly citrus gin. So David hand peels the orange, lemon, grapefruit, and he does everything by hand in what's called a vapour infused method, because I preferred the taste of that rather than a macerated version. So it's my favourite gin. So every night I sit down and think, oh, I love this.
Liz, it's been lovely coming out to your beautiful property in Kettering and having a look around. Who are you going to handball me onto?
It's a fairly new friend of mine that she moved from Sydney. She was living in Kettering, that's where we met her. The dogs became friends, and she's doing such amazing things. She's continued her academic life from Sydney University in making Australia a better place. So I'm just so amazed by what she's doing.